HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan, announcing show number 202, recorded live Tuesday, February 9th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Redify Senior Consultant Tatham Audie.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. We've just hit our 200th episode, and now to hit off the next 200, I'm sitting here today with Tatham Audie from Australia. He's actually a senior consultant at Redify, and he's currently sleeping on my couch. How are you, sir?
Good. And it's a wonderful couch.
It is quite lovely. Thank you. So you've been working on some stuff with your partner, Damian Edwards, right? And he just came to work for Microsoft, actually.
Yeah, we've split up the web duo. He's come to Microsoft, and I'm having to hold the fort back down in Australia.
Okay. But partners in crime that you guys are, you put together an interesting project, and it's called WebForms MVP, at least as of the time of this recording, although maybe it might be called something else some other day. But when I hear the name MVP, I immediately think about the Microsoft most valuable professional. But this is about the pattern. What is the difference between MVP and MVC?
MVC, if we think about it in a web sense, so sticking with ASP.NET as the sort of discussion area, is really about the controller getting the action or the request up front. So it goes to the controller, it can make a decision, and then it ultimately delegates to the view. MVP kind of flips that a little bit. So it's model view presenter. The view has a little bit of intelligence to it, so it actually will have things like buttons and events and whatever else, and you'll hit that first, and the presenter knows how to react to that, build the relevant information, and get that back down to the view.
Okay, so in MVC, there's a route that's kind of ignored. It's almost like MVCR, at least in the context of ASP.NET, where that route takes the incoming URL, and a miracle happens, and the controller gets involved. What happens in MVP from the point of the URL is requested and then something happens?
So in MVP, in an ASP.NET sense, your view will be something like the ASPX page. And the request will go to that ASPX page. Mm-hmm. You might have a button click or something like that fires. The presenter will react to that. And then it goes back to the view before it goes out to the response. So the presenter is kind of involved in the middle of the request, whereas the controller is involved up front.
Is the presenter a kind of a router of its own?
In some ways, you could go and change out the view through a presenter, but really it's about taking the view that's there and just displaying the right panels, setting the right states on various things.
Help me get the difference between a view and a presenter a little more separate, because I think that some people, maybe myself and maybe people who don't speak English, might think that view and presenter are kind of the same thing.
So a view is more about the rendering. So this is the markup we have, and this is how it sits. We want that one to be enabled, this one to be disabled. The presenter is what makes those decisions. So when they click this button, I need to go back to the database, save this record, and then I need to display some information there. So it has the intelligence. And that's also the area that where we want to have as much of our code as possible so that we can unit test it.
But given what you just said, couldn't one argue that we already have model view presenter in web forms by itself, that the ASPX page is the view, and the presenter is the code behind?
It is very close to that, but it's not a very clean implementation of it, and it's very easy to blur those lines and get them mixed up a little bit, and that's where you get into these really spaghetti, ugly web form sites.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that that's one of the reasons why a lot of people kind of, in the MVC camp, malign MVP as a concept? Or malign web forms, rather?
Yeah, so one of the things that I really like about MVC coming along is that it's not only given people a new framework to work with, but suddenly there's a whole set of .NET developers that have started to care about things like architectures and jQuery and CSS, and there's all this hidden training that's come along the way. And for a lot of people who've been working on web forms before that, and I know I was certainly one of those people originally, where you could fall into that spaghetti and get a bit of a mess. So MVC was the nice refresh.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that MVC kind of makes people happy because of its rigidity? It's focus on separation of concerns, and that people with a newly renewed focus of separation of concerns then look back at the web forms that they did before and they said, wow, it was all just kind of mushed together.
Sure. And MVC is very much about you put this here and then you put that there and then this here and you've got that separation of concerns, and it's very much convention as well. Whereas web forms, if you want to get that nice architecture, you've really got to work for it a little bit. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anywhere near that rigidity at all.
So is there by creating a project on top of web forms, by enhancing web forms with it, web form, what you're calling web forms MVP or web forms plus plus, you're making a statement about web forms, right? Just by virtue of the existence of the project, that what are you saying? Are you saying that it is deficient in some way? That web forms has dropped the ball and you're picking it up? What is your project saying by its existence?
Well, we still see that there's value in web forms, the same as there's obviously value in MVC. It really depends on what do you want to work with and what's the platform that's right for you. With web forms existing, we felt that we could improve upon it and help out with these architectures, put some of the base framework in place that allow you to do clean web forms development and testability. So we're not trying to make a statement of whether you should use MVC or web forms, but if you are using web forms, it'd be better if you used web forms MVP. We think it'll give you a better project and it'll make you a better web forms developer.
Mm-hmm. But you are making a statement that you think there's value in web forms.
Definitely.
I mean, and I'm not trying being the interviewer, I'm not trying to pick a side really other than the side of what I always pick, which is, you know, use the framework that makes you happy. But I think there's a lot of people arguing about MVC versus web forms who some people have just insisted you should simply abandon web forms. It's a useless thing. And you know, you're a guy I respect in the community, so I feel like there's kind of a vote of confidence by the fact that you're investing in web forms.
So there's obviously all the business decisions around, do you have an existing project? Mm-hmm. You don't need to go and rewrite that in MVC overnight. But even a lot of the new projects, there certainly is that bit of a dissing of web forms saying we're not going to use that. And I find that each of them do definitely have their place. I've used both of them on recent projects, Greenfields engagements, starting from scratch, of saying, in this case here, web forms is going to work better because of the team or because mm-hmm. of what we had to produce or some of the controls that are available or existing code we had. Not necessarily legacy code, but just stuff we wanted to integrate with. Or there's MVC, where that was particularly suited to some sort of framework or architecture we were working with in that sense.
Have you made a lot of hybrid applications? I've always been a big proponent of you might have like the back-end administrative section and web forms and some certain things on the front end, or you might mix and match on a URL by URL basis, whether you want web forms or MVC.
Yeah, definitely. The administration site's a good example of that. Actually done that a little bit sort of in reverse of where we had a MVC-based site, and then for a really quick administration system, we just dropped a dynamic data app in, which is web forms-based, and off we went. And mm-hmm. that gave us a really simple access panel.
Okay, so let's dig in a little detail here. So I think we all who are listening understand generally how web forms works. And, you know, a quick distinction to explain kind of the difference between MVC and web forms. Web forms is a control abstraction on top of HTML and HTTP. And with that control abstraction, you, of course, get the ability to have controls. With those controls come their behavior, their rendering, you know, the logic incorporated within those controls. And you also get an eventing model, which is a stateful eventing model over a stateless API, which is HTTP. What does Web Forms MVP as a project bring on top of that?
We put in a lot of the base classes and things like that that you'd want to use to apply a nice implementation of an MVP-based architecture to web forms. So it's not hard to do, but it's a little bit fiddly to go and get all the right stuff in all the right places to give you that clean architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've gone and prepared.
So what is it exactly? Is it a series of libraries? Is it a new project type? Walk me through a hello world scenario in a web forms MVP world.
So the first thing we have is there is a DLL we ship, which is just a single DLL. So you'd add that as a reference to your project. You'd start off with, say, a web application project, like you would normally do with web forms. Then what you'd do is build out the various parts of your website as user controls. So one of the really nice things about web forms and that control abstraction is not necessarily, I don't know, there's the usual argument of saying, oh, I can drop on this really big fancy data grid. I don't actually find that the best part. What I really like is the ability to composite pages. So you've got something like a really complex e-commerce site, and you've got menus down the side that are dynamic and carts on the top and all that sort of stuff. You can build each of those sections of your pages as controls.
Mm-hmm.
With WebForms MVP, you'd inherit each of those from an MVP user control. You define a model that it uses, and that's a presentation model. And you'd put an attribute on the code behind for that user control, which says what type of presenter to use. And at that point there, you've got the architecture working. So you go off and create a class for the presenter. There's a base class you inherit from, and it'll wire all the rest of it up for you.
Okay. So let's say I want to have a, if I can help me out here, we'll do an on the fly example. Let's say I've got my application. I want to add a ticker to it, and a ticker is something whose kind of logic and everything would be kind of orthogonal. I would make a user control, describe what I want that ticker to look like, and I could use CSS or divs, or I could use tables or whatever. That has a code behind with it.
So that would have a code behind that would normally inherit just from user control.
Right.
You would change that to inherit from MVP user control of type model. So the same as when you do a view in MVC, you have a strongly typed model. That's what we've got for web forms now as well. So you do an MVP user control of ticker model. You'd put an attribute on it, presenter binding, type of ticker presenter. That's the control done. Off you go, create a new class, call it ticker presenter, inherit from presenter of ticker model. At that point there, you've got a environment which feels very familiar to coding in a page behind. So you've got a load event that you can subscribe to. You can push information into the model. And you've also got support for things like inversion of control there. So you can go and pull in all your repositories and stuff like that if you want.
Okay. So to make sure I understand this, I've got my ASCX page. I've got my ASCX.vb or .cs that is now derived from a new base class.
And that's your view.
And that's my view. And do I have a lot of code in that code behind?
No. A lot of the sites we've been using this on, we literally don't have any code in that code behind at all. So the way we then get information out actually rendered onto the page is we use binding syntax in the markup. So very similar to the WebForms view engine in MVC, you can go out and in your markup use angle bracket percent equals model dot. Or we also support angle bracket percent hash model dot. What that allows you to do is say you've got a repeater or something like that to list out each of our ticker items. You can go in the markup, ASP repeater, data source equals angle bracket percent hash model dot ticker items. Something like that, right?
Okay.
And it'll automatically trigger the binding at the right point in the life cycle so that your repeater goes and renders all that content out.
And that's the kind of sloppy code I'd shove in a load event.
Yeah. So normally you'd get the load, you'd load it somehow, and then you go repeater one dot data source equals something, repeater dot data binds. So we get rid of all that. So your markup looks very much like almost like a templating language. So it's still web forms. You can still use controls, but it's a bit more template style. All of your logic's back in the presenters.
Okay. So I've got nothing in my code behind. I've associated my view and my presenter using the template style. You know, something of type. Explain to me again what that looks like. The view derives from MVP view user control.
Correct.
Of type ticker model in this case. And where is the presenter class?
The presenter class is an attribute that you put onto the user control. So you put a presenter binding attribute and tell it the type of presenter you want it to create.
Interesting.
And when it hits that user control, it'll go and find that attribute and go and create it.
So the view and the presenter are associated only by this attribute.
Correct.
Now, that's interesting. So that must have been an interesting design discussion. You could have done it as an attribute. You could have, if you had multiple inheritance, you could have done it like that. You probably could have passed it in type of T, comma, of, and then have another type, T1 and T2. You probably also could have put together some kind of a mapping in the global ASAX. Because ultimately what you're trying to do is tunnel two types into this system. Why did you choose to derive one and include the presenter while the other one included the model?
So the first thing you pick up on there is the idea of that we could have put in a whole bunch of places, and we do actually allow that. So that the way that it finds which presenter to use for a view, we call a presenter discovery strategy, and you can completely replace how that works.
Oh, so if you don't like the post-it note style of attributes on the class.
You can put them wherever you want. You can go and store them in a SQL database if you want. Probably not the best plan, but you could.
Sure.
The reason we did it through attributes, well, first of all, the reason that the model is there as a generic type argument is so that we get all the nice IntelliSense support actually in the view markup. So you go model dot, it shows up. And we need inheritance to do that. And that makes sense because it's part of the view's contract, what data it requires in the model. The presenter, though, there are some other scenarios that we wanted to support around. You can actually go and move that attribute off to the page and say, anytime you find one of these user controls, use that presenter for it. So then putting that user control on different pages could have different presenters wired up to them. And we also support things like composite views and shared presenters as other architectures.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman from another parallel universe. Got to tell you about some of our things our sponsors are doing. They make this free podcast possible. If you're developing a new line of business application, you've probably tried the latest version of Silverlight. Now you can get even better results by combining the functionality in Silverlight 4 beta with some of the richness of the third-party controls from our friends at Telerik. They're the first vendors to offer native support for the Silverlight 4 beta and their RAD controls. They've got a new Silverlight 4 CTP suite of these controls. They let you tap into the framework's great potential. You get native right mouse click and all the new features of Silverlight. There's 38 controls that give you all these features. You can start building those compelling line of business applications right away. I encourage you to check those products out at Telerik.com/Silverlight. And, thank Telerik for supporting .NET Rocks, supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page at Facebook.com/Telerik. Now back to the show. So that gives me, in my mind at least, I think I can understand the kind of standard page load scenario, that initial load. You've tidied up, what could be potentially a mess in page load. What about the postback model? What about the event model? There could be, let's say, multiple buttons and a combo box in this ticker, all of which could have events behind them, or multiple events. How does that get handled?
So you would have the controls as, say, ASP button controls or whatever you want in your markup. You would subscribe to the events in the markup. And then this is one point where you do have a little bit of code behind in the view, but all you do is catch that event and proxy it back up to the presenter. So on the view, what you then do is, same as you're already inheriting from MVP user control of ticker model, you would then implement an iTicker view, which describes what events your view is going to raise back to the presenter. And that's a grand total of like 4 lines of code.
And where does that interface come from? You have to create that
you
yourself?
You would write that yourself. And the value of writing that yourself is it then means you can mock the view, because the model is a concrete class. It's dumb. It's just a bunch of properties. That's easy. The presenter, you don't have any dependencies on it. They're all in version of control, whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
The view is the bit that you need to break out for testing. So having a view interface allows you to completely mock all the interactions of that user control for the purpose of testing the presenter.
Okay, so expand on that a little bit, because web forms, the one thing that people complain about is that they can't test it. What are we testing and what are we not testing? What parts of the system go untested? And is that or is that not okay?
So the only part of your code that you wouldn't test is in the code behind files, those event proxies.
Mm.
So your markup is basically markup. In pretty much any platform in the world, you don't really test the markup output. And that's fairly clean and obvious how that works.
Right, unless you use Selenium or something like that. Yeah.
Functional testing or something on top of it.
Sure, sure.
In a unit testing sense, we've moved all of the unit testable code into the presenter, which is basically all of the logic.
So that everything in the code behind, or what I've previously thought about as the code behind, is just one line events and one line wiring up of, or proxying rather, of those events kind of up the chain.
Sure. And coding in the presenter isn't really that much different from an initial experience point of view. So it's very different in the architecture it achieves,
mm-hmm.
but you can still go request.querystring, response.headers, all those are accessible, and that uses the system.web.abstractions namespace, the same as MVC does, so that's all unit testable and mockable as well.
So are you saying that if I was going to go poking around from the code behind in query string or form, that I'm really using an abstract type?
From your presenter, yes.
Because that's where my base class now, from the presenter.
From the presenter.
Yes. Not from MVP user control.
Well, you don't have any code in there other than just your event proxy, so you wouldn't be doing that.
Okay, so what about more complex scenarios? I know that in the web, a lot of the web forms applications that I've written, I'll find myself catching certain things in events and then having to go and check if not is postback. And, the next thing you know, what was a nice simple page load and a couple of events has turned into quite a little state machine.
So the first thing you really need to get is the load event isn't the place where everybody should be working.
Mm-hmm.
Just moving a lot of your code back to the init event gets around 95% of those is not postback problems.
Why is that?
View state starts tracking after init. So if you say you want to have a drop-down list and you want to populate it with a list of countries, if you do that in the load event, you go and add them all in, the person chooses something. When the page loads up again, you're going to clear out that list and add all the countries in again. You've lost their selection. So that's why you wrap it in the is not postback. The other problem with that approach is that you've actually stored the information twice. It's once in your HTML and once in your view state. If we move that code back to init, the init event fires first.
Mm-hmm.
You populate the contents of the drop-down list, and then view state starts tracking. So anything past this point is what will go into view state. the user's selection in the postback will then get pushed into the control. So you selected United States of America, and then the event will fire if they click the button or whatever. So that point there, yes, on every time a page is executing on your server, you're populating that combo box, but that's pretty cheap, or you can fix that with caching or whatever. But you're not storing it redundantly in view state, and you avoid all those is not postback checks. So there's a really good blog post about that, which Dave Reed actually put up, Infinite Loop. Google just view state Infinite Loop on Bing, and you'll find all the information about how that works. It was about a 3 or 4 page article.
So do you find the use for page load ever, really? I mean, is that just, what good is it then? It's ironic that it's the place that you end up when you hit F7, but what do you do with it?
Not a lot. Go back to init or catch click events.
So it's interesting. I'm hearing kind of like the defaults that historically web forms have given us don't enable best practices.
Not at all. And the templates really do need to get a bit of a refresh. One of the things we'd like to do with WebForms MVP as another step is to actually drop a series of our own project templates that go and clean up a bunch of that stuff. As a first step, there's another project on CodePlex, which are XHTML templates. They do a little bit more than just XHTML compliance. So what it is when you file new web application project, you'll get one where the web config's set up properly and you've got the right master pages, the right doc types and things on it. But it also goes and cleans up a few of those ugly points in the templates.
So it basically sets you up for success around XHTML.
Right. And we'd like to take those and extend them a little bit further again, so that things like when you create a new page, you don't have a page load handler there by default because you shouldn't be using it.
Okay. I remember, another thing about web forms is there's the, do you choose to respond to an event via an actual event or do you choose to do it via an override? Do you have any opinions about that?
In using the library or with WebForms MVP, you'd be subscribing from the presenter. So in that sense, you would be subscribing to an event.
Okay.
Sometimes though, I do find myself, I'm having to write code in master pages or something like that. And in those cases there, I'll always go and subscribe to the event rather than the override. It's just a lot more explicit and less black art.
So speaking of black arts, how trusted is this? I mean, what have you actually done with this? Is this just a spike that you kind of been screwing around with? Or is this something that you've actually put into production somewhere?
This is grown out of several of the projects that I've worked on as a consultant with Damian Edwards, who was largely the one who started the framework. And then on recent projects, we started working together on it. And one of the main ones is actually the largest retail e-commerce site in Australia. And it's pushing several million page views a day through this framework at the moment across quite a large server farm. So out of that, we've gone and fixed all the memory leaks and gone and done all the performance fixes and all that sort of fun. And the next one it's actually been picked up on is an Australian government project. So they're pretty confident to adopt it themselves. It's all open source. It's up on CodePlex. It's licensed under MSPL. And it's pretty stable so far.
How complicated is it?
It's really not that complicated. There's about 25 classes all up. They're all pretty small. A lot of it's just interfaces, the right amount of wiring. There are some crazy parts if you dig through the code, but those are for more advanced things like composite views and shared presenters, which aren't your normal use case.
Okay, well, let's get into those though, because are those things that I can, you know, I can do easily in web forms and you just need to support them, or are these advanced scenarios that really are only possible with web forms MVP?
So there's two real scenarios that are specific to web forms MVP that just aren't supported in web forms. The first one is messaging. So, one of the big advantages that I find about web forms is your ability to composite the page, as I was talking about. Let's say you've got an e-commerce site you're building. So this is obviously a real-world example I've run into. You've got a product page. Now, in the sidebar, you've got your menu that sits off somewhere else in your master page. You've got all your product details showing in the main section of the site, and somebody's decided, all right, well, we want to show a little widget in the sidebar that's related products or a bunch of links. How do you get the information between those two places? This is where your master page starts to get a bit messy and you go and try and find property setters around the owning page and stuff. And that's where web forms gets really ugly.
Well, yeah. I mean, people shove things into session. They shove things into items.context and hope that it'll stick around. They worry about what order things actually run in. It's chaos.
And this is where particularly the page lifecycle just turns into a nightmare. So the way we've solved that is you would build two user controls for that. You'd obviously have your main product details and then you would have your related products widget. They would both be MVP user controls and they'd each have their own presenter. Now, say the product details presenter, it's going to load the product from the database, push the information into the model. It can also publish that as a message. So it goes onto a message bus. Separately, we have our related products presenter.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to subscribe to a message of type product, so it's all strongly typed. And when that message turns up on the message bus, it'll get a copy of it. So we can say, oh, somewhere else on this page, this product's getting rendered, and this is all the information I need about that product to render this little widget. And all of the lifecycle of that's managed for you. So if you subscribe first, publish later, publish first, subscribe later, any of those scenarios, it doesn't matter. You'll always get the message.
Now, how does that work? Because I know I've had all sorts of trouble juggling the order in which things happen and where they live. And am I in pre-render or render? Even if you pick up a control and move it elsewhere on the page, it could change the order in which things happen.
We maintain a list of the subscriptions mm-hmm. and also a list of all the messages that have been published. So if you subscribe to a message of type A and then you publish one of B and then somebody else comes along and subscribes to B, we'll go, oh, hold on. We know that there's a pending message there for B. Here's a copy of it. The other thing we do is we have a callback of never received. So if you go and subscribe to a message of type product for, say, your related widget, and that message never comes, we'll actually also give you another callback so you can go and throw an exception or display some different UI or whatever you want to do in that case.
Mm-hmm.
And any time before pre-render, we manage all of that lifecycle. At pre-render, we close the message bus. We send out all those callbacks of, oh, you subscribed to that. You didn't get it. Just letting you know. So you then got enough time to react before render.
When I'm writing things like this, am I thinking about the page lifecycle anymore? I'm kind of hearing that I think about it a lot less, if at all.
No, there's basically one entry point to your presenter, which is just the init. And then from there, each of the presenters are all fairly independent. They don't need to know what other presenters are on the page, other than perhaps an implicit contract that whenever I have this related products widget, I need to have this other product control on the page too to get the right information there. But that's a pretty easy contract to manage. Other than that, they all just act in their own time, push stuff out to the message bus, and it appears when it needs to.
Can you get into scenarios where there's complex dependencies? Where, like, what happens if two controls are both loading a list of products, and we don't want to go to the database twice?
Well, ASP.NET, in rendering a page, unless you're explicitly going out and doing asynchronous tasks, then it's all running in synchronous order anyway. So one of them will load it first, and you really need to manage that through caching.
Okay, so that's really up to you and your model.
Sure.
To not hit it twice.
Right. That does lead into, though, if you do want to get into, if you've got expensive loads and you don't want to do them twice and things like that, there's obviously caching, but there's also async tasks. So say you're calling out to a web service and you don't want to block the rendering thread for that whole time while you wait for it to respond. WebForms already has support for asynchronous page tasks built into it, but we've brought that up through the WebForms MVP framework as well, so that from your presenter, you can lodge asynchronous tasks and get callbacks when they're completed to participate in all that lifecycle as well.
Now, what if I want to start using a bunch of JavaScript and jQuery and Ajax type stuff? Am I going to go and use jQuery and Moo tools and that kind of stuff, or am I going to use the Microsoft Ajax controls?
It's really independent of whether you're on MVC, WebForms, WebForms MVP, or anything, really, because your view should have that nice separation. On the last major project we used this on, the e-commerce site, we chose to use the Microsoft Ajax libraries and the jQuery libraries, because Microsoft Ajax gave us a really nice script loader,
mm-hmm.
which makes it really easy from different pages and master pages and things to represent all the scripts we need, push them out combined at runtime, things like that, and a really nice way of calling web services. jQuery obviously gives us a really nice platform for doing progressive enhancement on the client. One of the things we had on this site was that up in the header, it had like 6 items in cart. And if you clicked that, it would slide down the cart, like a bit of UI would just slide down over the page and show the number, what was actually in your cart. So that they would use jQuery to attach to the link, because normally it's just a hyperlink goes to the cart page. So if you don't have JavaScript, you go to the cart page. If you click it with JavaScript, jQuery will catch that, slide down the interface, and we'd use the Microsoft Ajax libraries to do a web service call to find out what was actually in your cart. Mm-hmm. So we didn't need to embed that information in the page.
That's a really nice example of like we said, progressive enhancement.
Sure. So we had full support for non-JavaScript along the way. And it really wasn't that hard to do. It gives you that nice experience.
So if I click on the items in cart link, that takes me to the cart.aspx page. But if I've got JavaScript, I'm going to get a nice, you know, local example of that. What did that web service call to get the list of things in the cart? Did it call an ASMX page or did it call?
Yep, we just had an ASMX that was then just published through the Microsoft Ajax script loader. It has a really nice services node. It does the JavaScript proxy. Really easy to call client side. And even with the WebForms MVP framework, we actually have full support for web services, HTTP handlers. everything like that, applying the same architecture. So you can have web services with presenters sitting behind them.
So if I wanted to do an ASHX, an HTTP handler of my own and return JSON custom, I could do that, or I could use an ASMX/JS and do it that way.
Yep. You just create where your HTTP handler would normally inherit from HTTP handler. You just change it to MVP HTTP handler, put the presenter binding attribute on it, and there you go. You're up and running.
Okay. So you've got base classes for basically everything.
We do user controls, HTTP handlers, and web services, but you don't need to use the base classes. A lot of times base classes as a concept scare people off, and particularly there are valid reasons for that in so many different cases.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're building a .NET Nuke module and you need to use their base class, but you want to use our MVP architecture. Obviously, you can't use the two base classes. So we also have very easy support. It's one line of code in your control in the init event that just says, hey, go and register me. And it'll wire it all up for you as well. So the base classes are just a nice little syntax way of doing that and saving you a few extra lines of code.
So at the risk of invoking the term alt.net, is this an alt.net friendly web forms?
It does hit on a lot of those points. We've tried to make it not very prescriptive in forcing you to do things, giving you a lot of options. It's very pluggable. It's testable. It's extendable.
Mm-hmm. So you've put together large live websites that are doing millions of hits a month, and you've got tests and continuous integration and inversion of control and all that
yep.
good stuff.
It's got the inversion control support. We have already built support for Unity, which is running on one of the government projects.
Mm-hmm.
We have support for Castle, which is running on the retail site. It's got all unit tests through it. We track code coverage, all of that.
And it's a pretty active project?
Yep. So far, we haven't actually cut a version 1 yet officially. It is stable. The only reason we haven't dropped a V1 mm-hmm. release is that we keep adding features and we haven't finished all the Docker yet. So we are pretty close to cutting that. But we've released 7 CTPs so far, and they're dropping about every 2 to 3 weeks.
And do you have a sense of how interested the community is? What kind of downloads you get?
There's been about 4,000 downloads so far, I think.
Yeah.
And fairly consistently throughout each of the releases, people are picking that up. And about 50% are downloading the compiled release and 50% downloading the source release, which is pretty cool. And there's actually also a contrib project has already spun up for it. One of the other guys in the community has spun up WebForms MVP contrib. So there he's building out things like common presenters you might want to use for stuff like login, other IOC integration points and so on. So mm-hmm. there's obviously other people in the community passionate about it.
And you see this, continuing on in 4.0, and I think assume things like page routes and things like that to make URLs friendly support in .NET 4?
Yep. So we've already started to cut builds that actually have all the support for things like page routes as well, and trying to get all those 4.0 features in there nice and early.
Wow. Yeah. I wish we knew someone at Microsoft to check this out.
Yeah. Maybe we do.
Do you think Damien's going to try to get the right people looking at this?
I think if you are on the Microsoft Redmond campus, you would struggle to avoid Damien in any form of web conversation.
Really? He's just talking passionate. About this at every moment?
Well, not just about this. He's very passionate about the open web, and it's good to see him over at Microsoft.
Well, this is very, very cool. I appreciate you sitting down and chatting with me. I'll put links up on the show site to make sure that people can see this. I want to know where they can get the source, where they can get the downloads. Is it just webformsmvp.com?
That's correct.
And what is the name of the site, the Australian site, that I can actually go and shop and see this live?
That's graysonline.com. So graysonline.com. That's Grays Australian Online. Bidding and retail buy now site.
And they're running this stuff live and they're happy with it.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tate Amati, for sitting out. And you should probably go and have a nap on the couch now.
Wonderful. Thank you, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.